Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 2, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 6.
The first question. You said that those who want to attain need discipline and effort at first. Is that not a thing of the ego? And will it not become more strengthened? I have always been hard on myself and missed much of the joys of life. Please explain the difference between discipline and control. There is a vast difference. Not only difference, but discipline and control are polar opposites. Control is of the ego. Discipline is from the non-ego. Control is manipulating yourself. Discipline is to understand yourself. Discipline is a natural phenomenon. Control, unnatural. Control is a sort of suppression. Discipline is spontaneous. Discipline needs only understanding. You understand and you act according to your understanding. Discipline has no ideal to follow. Discipline has no dogma to follow. Discipline is not perfectionist. Discipline leads you by and by towards wholeness. Control is perfectionist. It has an ideal to be achieved. You have an idea in the mind how you should be. The control has many shoulds and many should nots. Discipline has none. Discipline is a natural understanding, a flowering. The very word discipline comes from a root which means to learn. It comes from the same root as the word disciple. A disciple is one who is ready to learn. And discipline is that capacity of openness which helps you to learn. Discipline has nothing to do with control. In fact, a disciplined mind is never a mind who thinks in terms of control. There is no need for it. A disciplined mind needs no control. A disciplined mind is absolutely free. An undisciplined mind needs control. Because an undisciplined mind feels that without control there is danger. An undisciplined mind cannot trust oneself, hence control. For example, if you don't control yourself, you may kill somebody in anger, in rage. You can be a murderer. You need control. You are afraid of yourself. But a man of understanding, a man who understands himself and others, always feels compassion. Even if somebody is the enemy, a man of understanding has known all others. He has compassion. He understands. And he follows understanding. When I say this, don't misunderstand me. In fact, understanding need not be followed. The very word following gives an idea as if you have to do something. You understand, then you have to do something, follow. No. You understand, and everything settles by itself. You need not follow. It starts happening. So the first thing to understand is the difference between control and discipline. Control is a false coin invented by the society to substitute discipline. It looks exactly like discipline. Every false coin looks that way. Otherwise, you cannot make it current. It cannot circulate in the market. And there are many false coins about inner life. For example, control is a false coin for the real coin of discipline. For the real coin of understanding, knowledge is a false coin. For religion, sect is a false coin. To fulfill your need of being religious, many false sects are offered to you. Christianity, Hinduism, Jainism, all isms are false. Religion has no ism about it. It is not a dogma. It is something that flowers within you, not something which is enforced from without. Always be aware of the false coins because they are in circulation. And they have been in circulation for so long that almost people have forgotten about the real coins. Religion is neither Christian, nor Hindu, nor Mohammedan. Religion is simply religion. It is an attitude. One has to grow into it. One cannot be born into it. Nobody can be religious by birth. It is through creative effort. It is through suffering and experience. It is through wandering and coming home. It is through going astray and coming back to the right path. Through much suffering and experience, by and by, a certain quality of being starts within you, crystallizing. That crystallized being is religious. And the fragrance that surrounds that crystallized being is religion. It is indefinable. And the same is true about control and discipline. Beware of control. Never try to control yourself. Who will control really? If you understand, there is no need to control. If you don't understand, then who will control? This is the crux of the whole problem. If you understand, what is the need to control? You understand, so you do whatsoever is right. Not that you have to do it. You simply do it because how you can do the wrong? You are hungry, you don't start eating stones. You understand. Stones cannot be eaten, finished. There is no need to give you a commandment that never eat stones when you are hungry. it will be foolish, simply foolish to say, when you are thirsty, you drink water. What is the need to make any should or should not? Life is simple when you understand. There are no regulations, rules around it. There is no need, because your very understanding is the rule of all rules. There is only one golden rule, and that is understanding. All other rules are useless. They can be thrown. If you understand, you can drop all controls. You can be free. Because whatsoever you will do through the understanding. If you ask me the definition of what is right, I will say that which is done through understanding. Right and wrong have no objective values. There is nothing like a right action and a wrong action. Only actions done through understanding and actions done through non-understanding. So sometimes it is possible that one action may be wrong this moment, and the next moment it is right, because the situation has changed, and now the understanding says something else. It is moment to moment to live with a sensitive response with life. You don't have a fixed dogma how to act. You look around, you feel, you see, and then you act out of that feeling, seeing, knowing. The action comes. A man of control has no vision of life. When the door is just in front of him, he asks others, "Where is the door?" He is blind. Then he has to control himself. Because the door is changing every moment. Life is not a dead thing. Static, it is not. It is dynamic. So the same rule that was good for yesterday will not be good for today and cannot be good for tomorrow. But a man who lives through control has a fixed ideology. He follows his map. Roads go on being changed every day. Life goes on moving into new dimensions, and he goes on carrying his old rubbish ideology. He looks at his idea, then he follows it. Then he is always in the wrong situation. That's why you feel that you have missed many joys of life. You have to miss, because the only joy that life can give is a response of understanding. Then you feel many joys, but then you don't have any rules and no ideas and no ideals. You are not here to follow certain codes. You are here to live and discover your own code of life. And when you will become aware of your own code of life, you will see that it is not a fixed thing. It is as dynamic as life itself. If you try to control, it is the ego. It is the ego manipulating you. In many ways. And through the ego, the society manipulates you. And through the society, the dead, all those who are dead now, they manipulate you. Every living being, if he follows the dead ideology, is following dead people. Zarathustra is beautiful. Buddha is beautiful. Lao Tse is beautiful. Jesus is beautiful. But they are no more applicable. They lived their life. They flowered beautifully. Learn through them. But don't be a stupid follower. Be a disciple, but don't be a student. A student learns the word, the dead bird. A disciple just learns the secrets of understanding. Then he has his own understanding. He goes on his own way. He pays his respect to Lao Tse and says, "Now I am ready. I am grateful. I go my own way." He will always be grateful to Lao Tse. And this is the paradox. People who have been deadly following Jesus, Buddha, Muhammad, they can never forgive them. If you miss your joys of life because of them, how can you forgive them? How can you be really in gratitude? In fact, you are deeply in anger. If you come across them, you will kill them, you will murder them, because these are the people who have forced you to a controlled life. These are the people who didn't allow you to live as you would have liked to live. These are the people, Moses and Muhammad, who have given you commandments how to live. You cannot forgive them. Your gratitude is false. You are so miserable. How can you be grateful? For what? For your misery? You can be grateful? No. You can be grateful only when you are blissful. Gratitude follows like shadow when you have an inner blessing, a feeling of constant benediction. Be a man of discipline, but never be a man of control. Then how you can be disciplined? Because you know only one meaning of discipline, and that is being controlled by yourself or by others. Drop all rules and regulations. Live life with a deeper alertness, that's all. Understanding should be the only law. If you understand, you will love. If you love, you will not commit any harm to anybody. If you understand, you will be happy. If you are happy, you will share. If you understand, you will become so blissful that by your whole being, continuously as a continuum, like a river, will arise a thankfulness towards existence. That is the prayer. Try to understand life. Don't force. And remain always free from the past. Because if the past is there and you are controlling, you cannot understand life. And life is so fleeting. It doesn't wait. But why people try to make rules? Why they fall in the trap at all? They fall in the trap because the life of understanding is the life of danger. You have to rely upon yourself. The life of control is comfortable, secure. You need not rely on yourself. Moses will do. The Bible will do. The Quran will do. The Gita will do. You need not bother about the problems. You escape from the problems. You take shelter into old words, disciplines, thoughts. You cling to them. This is how you make a comfortable life, a life of convenience. But a life of convenience is not a life of bliss. Then you miss joys. Because joys are possible only when you live dangerously. There is no other way to live. Live dangerously. And when I say live dangerously, I mean live according to your own self, whatsoever the cost. Whatsoever is at the stake. But live according to your own consciousness, according to your own heart and feeling. If all security is lost, all comfort and convenience is lost, then too you will be happy. You may be a beggar. You may not be a king. You may be on the streets in the rags, but no emperor can compete with you. Even emperors will feel jealous of you, because you will have a richness not of things, a richness of consciousness. You will have a subtle light around you, and you will have a feeling of blissfulness. Even others can touch that feeling. It is so visible, so substantial. Others will be affected by it. It will become a magnet. You may be a beggar outwardly, but inwardly you have become a king. But if you live a life of convenience and security and comfort, you will avoid danger. You will avoid many difficulties and sufferings, but with those difficulties and sufferings, you will avoid all bliss that is possible in life. When you avoid suffering, you avoid bliss. Remember that. When you try to escape a problem, you are escaping the solution also. When you don't want to face a situation, you are crippling your own life. Never live a controlled life. That is the life of an escapist. But be disciplined. Disciplined not according to me, not according to anybody, but according to your own light. Be a light unto yourself. That is Buddha's last saying. Before he died, the last thing that he uttered was, be a light unto yourself. That is discipline. Second question. Buddha used to send someone afraid of death to meditate in the cemetery to make him ready for real meditation. I feel my fear of death as a barrier to my meditation. Where are you going to send me? There is no need. You have come to the cemetery. This English word cemetery is very beautiful. It comes from a Sanskrit word samadhi. In India, samadhi means both. The cemetery, the tomb where a man is buried, and also the final realization, the ultimate realization. Both, because both are a sort of death. When you die, that is an ordinary death of the body. But the cluster of the mind survives, goes on taking new births, reincarnates, moves into the wheel of life and death. That is not total death. Ordinary death, partial death, a part of you dies. But the remaining part is so powerful that it recreates the dead part. A new body is built again. A new body crystallizes again. Then there is the final death. The final death is only of a Buddha. One who has known and has come to know the secret of life, has realized all that life can give. Now no more for him to come back. He has passed the examination. He returns no more. He dies not only as body, he dies as mind, as ego. He dies completely. Only the inner space remains, which becomes one with the outer space. The walls between the inner and the outer disappear. We call that too samadhi. And the English word originated from samadhi. The symmetry. No, I'm not going to send you anywhere. I am your samadhi, your symmetry here. You can die in me. An ordinary symmetry won't do. You can get accustomed to it. There are people who work on the symmetry. They live there, but they have not become enlightened. They have become accustomed, habitual. The whole scene has become routine. Every day people come, dead bodies are being carried, they help to bury them or burn them. And that is that. Then they take their food and they go to sleep. And they live an ordinary life. Maybe just in the beginning, if I send you to a cemetery, you may be shocked, you may become afraid, because the experience is new. But by and by, you will settle in it. That is not going to change you much. So I have called you to me. If you look into me, you will find your final symmetry. So now there is no need to send you anywhere else. The third question. In all my years of catharsis, in therapy, and in meditation, I never lose control. I always have a sense of being into the feeling and also of watching it. Is this being split and not whole? Please explain what is happening. I have this idea that one should totally lose oneself, let go, lose control. There are two ways to come out of the situation. One is to lose control completely or to have control completely. There are two paths. One is of deep involvement, so deep that nothing is left behind. For example, Sufis in their dervish dances involve themselves completely, lost, merged. Then there is another dimension, which is of awareness. Zen people remain alert and aware, carrying water from the well, cutting wood in the forest, whatsoever they are doing. Eating, sitting, walking, going to sleep, preparing the bed, they remain completely alert. These are the two ways. Either become completely aware, so that whatsoever is happening just becomes objective. You are totally cut from it. You become a witness. Or to get involved completely, so that there is no witness at all. You have become the thing whatsoever is happening. If you are dancing, you have become the dance. There is no witness to it. Both lead to the same. Because deep down, the real thing is not whether you get lost or you remain alert. The real thing is to be total. Totally lost or totally aware. In both the cases, you fulfill the condition of being total. So don't think that they are opposites. And there are two types of people. Those who can get easily lost. People of the feeling type. And there are another type of people. People intellectual type. So one has to remember his own type and find it. If it is difficult for you to lose totally, then forget about losing. Don't fight with it. Drop the idea. Maybe you are the intellectual type. Then there is a path for you. Become aware. Forget the whole idea of losing, dissolving. That is not for you. You be aware. And don't feel that you are missing something. You will reach the same point from a different route. The same peak will be reached, but your path will be different. And there are only two types of people. So two types of path are there. The path of devotion, what in India is called bhakti yoga, the path of love and devotion, a mira, a chaitanya, dancing, singing, losing themselves completely into the act. When mira is dancing, there is only dance, there is no mira. The dancer is completely merged into the dance. When Chaitanya is singing and dancing, there is no Chaitanya. He has become one with the act. Then there is Buddha, Mahavir. They are aware, alert. Whatsoever they are doing, they are so alert that the doing is just something outside. It never touches them. They remain untouched. They pass through the water, but the water never touches them. They remain uninvolved, uncommitted, unidentified. To me, both are true, because I am not a sectarian. If you go to Buddhists, they will say, don't follow that path of devotion. You will be lost. If you go to the followers of Chaitanya, they will say, don't listen to this Buddha. Because unless you lose yourself, how can you attain? You will become egoistic. But I tell you, both the paths lead. The real question is not what path to choose, the real question is what type you are. Just feel your type. And if In years of catharsis in therapy and meditation, you have never been able to lose control than now. At least lose the idea of losing control. Try being alert. Fourth question. You said that only man is violent and kills for sport, and that animals kill for food, yet I have witnessed dogs tearing apart a fox for sport, a fox killing 9 chickens and eating only one, not to mention the red ants viciously attacking us during meditation. Does this not put animals in the same category as man? You must have come across some very high evolved animals who are just going to be born as human beings in their next incarnation. They are almost human. Dogs are being corrupted by men. Animals which live with men are almost corrupted. They have become human. Dogs, cats, and other animals. And if you have come across so many situations where you feel that the thing was done, the violence was done for its sport, then they are already human beings. Soon you will meet them somewhere in their human form. But I tell you, only man is violent. All other animals, you may not understand them. They may have killed more than they could eat. That only shows they are not doing right arithmetic. That's all. They could have killed more than they could eat. That simply shows they don't know how to calculate beforehand. But it is not a sport. They are not doing just for their enjoyment. No. And the ants walking on your body when you are meditating are not vicious. They don't know at all that you are meditating. They don't know at all that you are. They may be on their own business. Ants are very business-like. They may be on their own trip. You are just in their way, that's all. In fact, you are disturbing them, not they. You are just sitting there like a rock. You think you are meditating. And you are disturbing their whole route. And ants are great followers of their leaders. If the leader has gone one way, all the ants are going that way. They are always very controlled. They are like the army. So they have to pass you. You think that you are on the way. You think that they are disturbing you. They think you are just in their way, disturbing them. No, they are not vicious. Nobody is vicious except man. Nobody can be, because to be vicious, much thinking capacity is needed. To be vicious, one has to think about the future. One has to calculate about the future. To be vicious, one has to be very, very thinking about past experiences, possibilities, impossibilities, future, cunning, clever. To be vicious, one has to be a disciple of Machiavelli or Chanakya. Machiavelli says in his Prince that before somebody attacks you, you should attack him, because that is the only defense. The other has not attacked you yet, but before he attacks, you have to only suspect and then attack first, because that is the only great defense. If you attack first, there is more possibility to win. If he attacks first, then there is less possibility to win. Machiavelli says, don't trust anybody, not even a friend. Because who knows, the friend may become the enemy next day. So don't say things even to a friend which you would not like to say to the enemy. And don't say things about the enemy, bad things about the enemy, because who knows, the next day he may become the friend, then there will be always a barrier. This is cleverness, cunningness. This man, Machiavelli, was really very, very clever, cunning. I mean, nobody has achieved that peak of cunningness ever. Every monarch in the West read his book, and every monarch was impressed. He was right, and every monarch tried to follow him, but no monarch employed him in his service, because such a dangerous man can be dangerous. He lived a poor man, and he died a poor man. He tried many courts, but all doors were closed. His book was accepted everywhere, but he was not expected. Such a clever man can be dangerous. They were applying his own ideology against him. Because if a man can be so clever, he will create trouble. Once he comes close, he can create trouble. Man is vicious, because only man can be Machiavellian. Other animals are simple, very simple. And when you think that they are doing something viciously, you are wrong. You think mosquitoes disturbing your meditation? They don't know. They don't know you at all. You are just food for them. And they are seeking their food, a simple thing. When you go to the tree, to the apple tree, or to any other fruit tree, and you take the fruits from the tree, have you ever thought that you are vicious to the tree? No, never the idea comes. The same is being done by the mosquito to you. And mosquitoes are very impartial. Even to a Buddha they will do the same. They did. I was staying in Sarnath once, the place Buddha gave his first sermon. Buddha moved a small part of the India, the Bihar. So many times he passed, because 40 years of wandering, from every village he passed so many times, but Sarnath he never came again. Only once he visited, the first time, never he came again. So I asked a Buddhist bhikkhu, who is the head of the Sarnath temple, that what is the matter? Why Buddha never came again? He brooded and he said, maybe mosquitoes. Because Sarnath has the biggest mosquitoes in India. Mosquitoes are impartial. They don't bother whether you are a Buddha or not, whether you are meditating or murdering someone. They are in search for their food. And as you are in search for your food and you never feel you are vicious, why they should be thought as vicious? Nobody is vicious. Even the germs that can kill you, they too are not vicious. They are in search of their food. Even the germs that create cancer in your body, that will kill you certainly, that no medicine can help, even they are not vicious. They are not Machiavellian. They are not politicians. They are simple people, just in search of food. And they are very happy that they have found a home within you. They are not doing any harm to you knowingly, because they cannot do anything knowingly. They are enjoying life as you are enjoying life. Once you understand this, I don't mean that you just sit naked and become food for them. That is not my meaning. You protect yourself, but don't think them vicious. You protect yourself. If the tree could have protected, the tree must have protected herself against you. You protect. Even the mosquito protects. Even the mosquitoes become immune to DDT. Everybody has to protect oneself. I'm not saying that you become a victim, thinking that mosquitoes are not vicious, so I should sit naked and allow them because they are in search of food. Then you are moving to other extreme, to other foolishness. You protect yourself. Everybody protects. Even the mosquito will protect himself. But don't think that they are vicious. Because the idea that the life is vicious around you is very dangerous. That idea will harm you more than all the animals and all the mosquitoes and all the ants combined can harm. Because that idea will give you a feeling of separateness from life. And that idea will give you an enmity towards life. And that idea will never allow you to surrender to the whole. Fifth question, what is money? And why are most people deeply uncomfortable about it, in one way or another? It is a touchy question. Because money is not what it appears. Money is more deep-rooted. Money is not just there outside in the currency notes. It is something to do with your inner mind, attitudes. Money is your love of things. Money is your escape from persons. Money is your security against death. Money is your effort to control life. Money is thousand and one things. Money is not just in the currency notes, otherwise things would have been very easy. Money is your love. Love with things, not with persons. Most comfortable love is with things, because things are dead. You can possess them easily. You can possess a big house, a palace, the greatest palace you can possess easily, but you cannot possess even a smallest baby. Even that baby rejects. Even that baby fights for his freedom. A small baby, howsoever small, is dangerous for the man who wants to possess. He will rebel. He will become rebellious, but he will not allow anybody to possess him. People who cannot love persons start loving money, because money is a means to possess things. The more money you have, the more things you can possess. And the more things you possess, the more you can forget about persons. You will have many things, but you will not have any contentment. Because deep contentment comes only when you love a person. Because the money will not revolt, but it cannot respond also. That's the trouble. That's why miserly people become very ugly. Nobody has responded to their love ever. How can you be beautiful without love falling on you? Without love showering on you like flowers, how can you be beautiful? You become ugly. You become closed. A man who possesses money or tries to possess money is miserly, will always be afraid of persons and people, because if they are allowed to come closer, they may start sharing. If you allow somebody closeness, you have to allow some sharing also. People who love things become like things, dead, closed. Nothing vibrates in them. Nothing dances and sings in them. Their heart has lost the beat. They live a mechanical life. They drag, burdened with many things, but they don't have any freedom. Because only love can give you freedom. But love can give you freedom only if you give freedom to love. People who are afraid of love become possessive of the money. People who love become non-possessive. Money doesn't matter much. If it is okay. It can be used. If it is not, that too is okay. Because love is such a kingdom, no money can purchase. Love is such a deep fulfillment that you can be a beggar on the street and you can sing if you have love in the heart. If you have loved and you have been loved, love crowns you. Makes a king. Money simply makes you ugly. I am not against money. I am not saying that go and throw it, because that is another extreme. That is also the last step of the miserly mind. A man who has suffered too much because of the money, clinging to the money, and could not love anybody and could not become open, in the end becomes so frustrated that he throws the money, renounces and goes to the Himalayas, enters a Tibetan monastery, becomes a lama. This man has not understood. If you understand, money can be used. But people who don't understand, either they are misers, they can't use the money, or they renounce the money. Because in renouncing also, they are saving the same mind. Now there will be no difficulty in using. You renounce all and escape. But they cannot use. They are afraid of using it. They can renounce. Remember this. I have seen misers renouncing completely, totally. The man who founded a university in Sagar in India, I was a student there. The man was a rare specimen. His name was Dr. Hari Singh Gaur. I have never come across a greater miser than him. And I have not come across a greater renouncer also. He was perfect in both the ways. For his whole life, he never gave a single paisa to anybody. No beggar ever received anything from his bungalow. It was known in his town, Sagar, that if some beggar is going to Hari Singh's house to ask, others will laugh and they will say, seems to be new to the town. Nobody has ever received anything. He never donated a single rupee for any cause, humanitarian or anything. For Indian National Freedom Movement, he never donated a single paisa. No, that was not his way. He was such a perfect miser. And he was one of the greatest liars in the world. He had three offices, one in India, one in China, one in England. 4 months in England, he was working, 4 months in India, 4 months in China. He was one of the best liars in the world. He accumulated so much money, and then in the end he donated his whole life savings. The whole University of Sagar is created by a single person's donation. It is one of the most beautiful universities. But when he donated all. You will be surprised. He donated so absolutely that he has not left a single pie for his children. Now they are fighting in the courts. They have nothing. They are beggars on the street. The miser remains miser. To the very end, even when he renounces, he couldn't give to his children a single pie. But he could renounce the whole. First you can accumulate money like a madman. Then one day you understand that you wasted your whole life. When you understand this, you become afraid. But the old habit persists. You can give the whole and forget about in an escape. But you cannot share it. A man of understanding, if he has money, shares. Because money is not for itself, it is for life. If he feels that life needs it, love needs it, he can throw it completely. But it is not a renunciation. It is again using it. Love is the goal for him. Money is the means. But money is never the goal. People who are after money, money is the goal. Love becomes just only a means. Even their prayer is for money. Even prayer becomes a means to the money. Money is a very complex phenomena. Why people get so much into it, and so many people at that? It has a certain appeal, a magnetic appeal. Money has a hypnotic appeal in it, and the appeal is that you can possess it completely. Money is very docile. It becomes a slave. The ego feels very fulfilled. Love is not docile. Love is rebellious. You cannot possess love. You can possess a woman, you can possess a man, but you can never possess love. If you possess a woman, the woman has become money. A thing. If you possess a man, the man has become money, a thing, an instrument. A man is man only, a woman is woman only, when they are end unto themselves, not a means to anything else. Money is the means. And to become obsessed with the means is the greatest foolishness that can occur to a man, and the greatest curse. Money should not become the goal. And I am not saying at the same time that you renounce it and become beggars. Use it. It is a good means. I am not against money. I have nothing to say against it. I am saying something about you and your position, not about money. Money can be beautiful. If it is not possessed, if you don't become obsessed with it, it can be beautiful. Money is like blood circulating in the body. In the body of the society, money circulates. It is blood. It helps society to be enriched, to be alive. But it is like blood. You must have heard about diseases in which the blood stops and cannot circulate. Clots of blood come into existence and they become blocks, and the blood cannot circulate in the body. Then you are paralyzed. And if the clots happen in the heart, you are dead. If money circulates, moves from one hand to another, goes on moving, the more the movement, the better, then the blood circulates well. The life goes healthy. But when a miser comes in, a clot has happened. Somewhere somebody is accumulating, not sharing. That is a clot in the blood circulation. The man disturbs. He does not live himself, and because of his blocking, he does not allow others to live. The money has stopped circulating. Blood circulating is life. Blood stopped, blocked, is death. Money circulating is life. Money stopped, blocked, is death. I am for a society where money moves fast. Nobody clings to it. Everybody uses it. And do you remember a simple law of money is, the more you use it, the more valuable it is. For example, here we are sitting. if you all have 100 rupees in the pocket and 10 persons have 100 rupees in the pocket and they keep it to themselves, then 10 persons have only 1,000 rupees dead. But those rupees circulate. If they take two rounds, 10,000 have become 2,000, 20,000. If they take three rounds, they have become 30,000. If they take four rounds, the more they circulate, the more money. Because a man who keeps 100 rupees, those 100 rupees are dead. If he uses, they go to somebody else, then they come to him again because others are also using. Now he has 200 rupees. Again, 300, 400, 500. The more you use, the more money floats and circulates. The society is richer. America is richer because America is the least miserly country in the world. Money circulates fast. Everybody is using that money which he has, and even that money which he is going to have in the future. He is using that too. A country is bound to become rich. A country like India is bound to remain poor. People cling. If you cling to the money, the country will remain poor. Nobody uses it. The money becomes like clots in blood. India has two types of people, misers and renouncers. These both types are wrong, ill, abnormal. Neurotic. One should have money, earn money, produce money, and use it. One should hoard only to use, and one should use only to hoard. It becomes a circle. Then a person is both miserly and a renouncer together. When you are miserly and renouncer together, you are neither miserly nor renouncer. You simply enjoy whatever money can give. And money can give many things, and money cannot give many things. When you use, then you know what money can give. Money can give all that is outwardly, things of this world. Nothing is wrong in them. Having a beautiful house, nothing is wrong in it. Having a beautiful garden, nothing is wrong in it. The money can give it to you. But the money cannot give you love. That is expecting too much from poor money. One should expect only that which can be expected. One should not move in the impossibilities. Just asking poor money to have, to give you love. Poor money cannot do that. Nothing is wrong. Don't get angry with the money. Don't burn it and don't throw it in the river and go to the Himalayas. In the first place, you ask something which a man of understanding will never ask. You are foolish, that's all. Nothing is wrong with the money. A wandering monk came to see me 2-3 years before. And he was very much against money. He would not touch even. And this is neurosis. There are people who only count money the whole day. In the night also in their minds they go on counting. They only touch money with a loving hand. They never touch anybody else with a loving hand. when they look at their currency notes, watch their eyes, a sparkle. They are hypnotized. These are neurotic people. Then there are other neurotics. This wandering monk came to me. He will not touch money. So I said, then it will be very difficult for you. How you came to Bombay to see me? He said, nothing difficult. He saw two other men, his disciples. They can touch. They are not so evolved beings. What foolishness. They can purchase the ticket and they can keep the money. And he said, I don't touch. I have gone far beyond it. But what is the point? Now you are not only using money, you are using two other persons as your pockets. You have reduced two persons, alive persons, as your pockets. You have murdered. What was wrong then keeping it in your own pocket? So it seems you are in favor of money. What money can give? Can money give love? Can money give God? I said, you are foolish if you ask from poor money love and God. Your expectations are false. Money never promised you. But whatsoever money promises, it can give. It never promises that it can give you love. If you expect, you are idiotic. These people who have been expecting too much from the money, one day become enemies of the money, then they escape, then they don't touch money. Even Vinoba, if you bring money to him, he closes his eyes. He will not see. What nonsense. What is wrong in money? Something still seems to be miserly inside. Something still seems to be like a wound. Otherwise, why close your eyes? What is wrong in a currency note? Just a paper. And these spiritual people go and say, this is just a paper. But you put ordinary paper in their hands, they touch. But when you put a currency note, they throw it as if it is a scorpion. Are a very deadly disease. Neurosis can move from one extreme to another. Use money. Money is beautiful as far as it goes. And it goes far enough. As far as the world is concerned, it goes far enough. But don't expect love. It is of the interior, of the inner being. And don't ask God. It is transcendental. Use everything for its own capacities, not for your dreams. Then you are a healthy man. And to be healthy is to be holy. Don't be abnormal in any way. Be normal, ordinary. Just create more understanding so that you can see. Money can be used, should be used. It can give you a beautiful world. Otherwise, sooner or later, if you are against money, you will create a dirty country like India. Everything dirty. But they think they are great spiritualists. Everything has gone ugly. But they think they are great spiritualists because they have renounced. That's why things have gone so bad. They think one has to close one's eyes and not look outside. It is good to look outside. Because outside is God's creation. It is good to look inside because inside is sitting the Creator. Both are good. And eyes are meant to blink. They are not meant to remain open forever, and they are not meant to be closed forever. They are meant to blink, open and close, open and close. That is the rhythm, out and in, out and in. Look out the beautiful creation, look inside the beautiful God. And by you will see the in and out meet and mingle and are one. The sixth question, what is the difference between passivity and laziness, in position and inertia? Sometimes I feel that without force of will, I would never get out of bed. There is vast difference between laziness and passivity. Passivity is alert. Laziness is dull. Passivity is energy. Laziness is nothing but no energy, a state of no energy. Never get confused between passivity and laziness. Laziness is the ill state of affairs. Passivity is just wonderful health. Passivity is so healthy that it has no need for activity also. Because the need to be active may be again an obsession. Because you cannot remain still. You feel afraid of being still. Because you cannot remain with yourself. You feel afraid of being yourself. You move into activity. Activity is an escape. A constant need for occupation is not a good state of affairs. One should be able to just be passive and enjoy. Enjoy what? Enjoy the breeze passing. Enjoy the clouds moving. Enjoy the trees so happy and so green. Enjoy the birds singing. Or just enjoy breathing in and out. It too is very beautiful. Just to be capable to breathe silently, to be alive, is a tremendous phenomenon. It is a miracle to feel oneself that I am here and now. This moment I am alive. I can look, I can listen, I can touch, I can taste. Life is happening to me this very moment. The river of life is flowing through me. Just to feel it. But passivity is alert energy. When I say alert energy, I mean passivity can become any moment activity. Energy is there. You can transform it into activity any moment. Not even a single moment's notice has to be given. Out of passivity, you can just get up and run for miles. In fact, more so. A man who has been active may not be able to run for miles because activity dissipates energy. A man who was passive is full of energy, a reservoir. And it is alert. If you watch a passive man, forget man, because it will be difficult to find a man and to watch him. Watch a cat sitting silently, but how alert. Even if her eyes are closed, and even if you say that she is dreaming and nodding the head, or in her dream, a beautiful dream, eating a mouse, you can see the lips moving and the enjoyment that comes to a cat when she eats a mouse. Just a slight noise and everything is alert. The cat is as aware as a Buddha. Suddenly, not a single moment lasts. Somebody has entered the room and the cat is alert. I look at a cat watching near the mouse hole, waiting for the mouse to come out. How silently, how still she waits. You cannot find such a perfect yogi. Because no yogi is so confident about God coming out of his hole. The cat is perfectly confident, certain, absolutely certain. She trusts mouse, he will be coming. And he comes. And then look, the jump, the energy, the radiant energy, the alertness. And in a single jump, the mouse is caught. And the cat never misses. Watch passivity. You will always find it glistening with his reservoir of life, energy, radiance. Any moment ready to jump into activity, the energy is ready. It is not lethargy. It is not inertia. It is not low energy. It is energy waiting. It can be transformed any moment. Lethargy, laziness, is a state of no energy. You are as if you are almost dead. Then you have to pull yourself out of the bed. And then you have to pull yourself the whole day out of everything. Somehow you pull yourself out of the bed. Somehow you pull yourself to prepare tea. Somehow you drink the tea. Somehow you stop the breakfast, otherwise you will go on eating. Because a lazy man even has no energy to stop anything. He can sleep or he can eat, but then he goes on. Because who will stop? For stopping, will be needed. So you drag on from the morning to the evening. And then you have to drag yourself to bed again. Because the lazy man cannot just go to bed. One who has not come just out of bed will never be capable to go just to bed. No, even that is dragging himself. He drags from the club and the hotel, somehow goes, drag himself from the TV. Otherwise, he is glued to the chair. He cannot get up. Somehow puts the TV or radio off, goes to bed. Somehow drags himself to make love. But dragging, it is a no energy state. It is not in. It is not passivity. Don't think that this is passivity. This is disease. What to do? First, go to the doctor and let your body be checked. Because whenever you have some problem, always start from the body. You may be lacking some vitamins in your food. You may be lacking some hormones in your blood. The first thing is the body. So first take care of the body. Out of 100 cases, 90 cases will be immediately helped by the doctor. For them, there is no need to come to me. Ten 10% cases, if doctors can't help you, then come to me. Because they must be then concerned with the mind. You are afraid to live. For 10% cases, I am saying, it is not really low energy. You are afraid to get out of the bed. You are afraid because life is there. Again, you will have to move in life, meet people, love people, be friendly, be intimate. Anything possible, anything can happen. You are afraid of the unknown. You want to remain in the coziness of your bed. It seems to be protected. There are many people who remain ill just because they are afraid of life. They are not actually ill. They are pretending. If the doctors cannot help you, then come to me. You may be afraid of life. It happens almost always. For example, a man is losing business. Suddenly there is heart attack. People think it is because he was losing business. In fact, it has some concern with the losing of the business, but that is not the cause. Now there seems to be no way to go again to the market to save face. He is creating his illness. The heart attack is not created by the business situation. The heart attack is a psychological defense. Now he can lie in the bed and at least rationalize that what can he do? He is so ill with a heart attack. Life is in danger. So the business is going. He is going bankrupt because he is ill. Now, lying in the bed, he can rationalize that it is not my fault. What can I do? What can I do against fate? Now, the wife can also not say that go to the market, go to the shop. Nobody can say. Now, he has a perfect alibi to remain in the bed. He is afraid to go to the market. You are afraid to go to life. Life situations, you cannot encounter them. So it is better to live in the bed. This is suicidal. If mind is the case, then something can be done. If the body is the case, then don't be worried. It can be done by a doctor. You need not do many great sadhanas for it. First, let the body be checked. If mind is the case, then we can solve it. Then we can bring all unconscious fears up. We can help them to surface. Once they surface, once they come up in the consciousness, they disappear. You gather courage. Then there is no need to use will to get up out of the bed. Will is not a good thing. One should get up out of the energy, not because of the will effort. One should get up because one slept the whole night so beautifully. And who is now? One is so full of energy. The very energy brings you out of the bed, not any will effort. And then the whole day you work and live and experience thousand and one things. Then you are tired. The day is finished. That very state brings you to bed again to relax. You need not drag. Life should not be a dragging. It should be a spontaneous flowing. But first, try to solve the bodily problems. If nothing can be done, throw the body. then something can always be done through the mind. The last question, is Jesus offer the other cheek attitude applicable for us today here in Pune, or should we meet the force offered to us with force, or should we respond as we feel befits the situation? No, I don't give you any dogma. I don't give you any formula to live up to, because all formulas are false. All formulas are dead, and all formulas create a structure around you, and that structure becomes by and by your imprisonment. I don't give you any formula, not even the Jesus formula. I want you to be understanding, alert, aware. Let that be your only source of accents sometimes. Maybe it is good to offer the other cheek, but only sometimes. It is relative. Sometimes it is better to hit hard, but that too sometimes. And one can never predict. You have to watch this whole situation of a certain moment and live with total response. If you carry a formula, you will not be free. I have heard an anecdote. A Christian saint who used to follow Jesus' sayings word to word, literally, was hit hard by an enemy on one cheek. Of course, he showed him the other cheek. That's how Jesus says it has to be done. The man hit again hard on the other cheek. The so-called saint was waiting that this will bring a conversion to the man, as all Christians think. That when you offer the other cheek, the other man will be so much enlightened by your compassion, love, brotherly feeling. He will be so encompassed by your beautiful gesture of offering the other cheek that he will simply fall on your feet and become a disciple. But that doesn't happen in life. Life is not so easy. The man, seeing that this man is offering the other cheek, hit him hard, harder than first. Now the saint was a little in doubt what to do, because Jesus doesn't say then again offer the other cheek. Now the formula comes to an end. So he was in a little doubt, tried to decide what to do. Then he jumped on the enemy. The enemy was surprised. He said, what are you doing, a Christian saint? First you followed the rule which I was waiting, and you proved that you are a Christian saint, but what are you doing now? The Christian saint said, but the formula ends there. Up to now there was Jesus, now I am there. Even in the time when Jesus was alive, somebody asked him, when he said that when somebody hits on your right cheek, give him the left. Somebody asked that how many times should it be done? 7 times will do? Jesus said, 7 times? No, not even 77 times. I would say to you, 777 times. but the end will come. 777 times. But what about 778th time? All formulas come to an end. Howsoever long rope you give to them, they come to an end. 7 or 77 doesn't make much difference. Formulas are dead. They have limitations. Life is infinite, has no limitations. You just watch the situation and don't have any formula in your head. Otherwise, you will not be able to watch the situation as it is. The formula will overcolor the whole thing. You simply put all Jesus, all Buddhas, all Rajnis aside. You just look at the situation and don't be Rajnis even for two times. From the very beginning, be yourself. The Christian saint has to be himself. Third time, when the situation was again the same. Why? Wait for that. You be yourself from the very beginning. And then you will never repent. Out of the total situation act, there is no repentance. Whatsoever you could do, you did. Then you can move with no scars. Let your life be a life of total understanding. That's all I would like to say to you. Don't ask for specific formulas. I have none. Only a general attitude. And the light of understanding, the fragrance of understanding, and whatsoever happens in it is good, is virtuous. Enough for today.